Curtis Sliwa.
The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa
from
the Guardian Angels was over there.
Curtis Sliwa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of the Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
Another one bites the dust. Another one bites the dust. And another one gone. And another one gone. Another one bites the dust. Hey, hey, we're gonna get you too. Another one bites the dust.
7 minutes after the hour 12, as we are high atop Madison Square Garden, these great facilities provided for us to talk to all of you by NJDiet.com. And it's Juliet. Me too, hashtag Huddy. Who's
hashtag
in the house?
Hashtag me too.
Hashtag me
My
too,
man.
Huddy. Who
Program.
Is in the house today, and no better time, because about an hour ago, Al Franken decided he could not face off against all the Democratic colleagues of his in the Senate who have called for him to resign. He resigned, so that meant back-to-back, belly-to-belly. We had John Conyers retiring from his hospital room in Detroit, and Al Franken resigning from the U.S. Senate as he addressed the media and took some shots at Judge Roy Moore and the President of the United States, Donald Trump.
I, of all people, am aware that there is some irony in the fact that I am leaving while a man who has bragged on tape about his history of sexual assault sits in the Oval Office, and a man who has repeatedly preyed on young girls' campaigns for the Senate with the full support of his party.
Yep. And
yeah,
it's an excellent point.
That's absolutely true. Whether you are a Trump fanatic or not, I mean, the fact is, what he said is a fact.
Well, the Democrats have seized the high ground on this. Two major figures in their party have been forced to leave. The question for the Republicans, who have always called themselves the party of family values, conservatives,
yep,
is you have two members in the House, two Republicans from Texas, one who was flashing his schlong around, and another who paid $85,000 in taxpayer hush money,
mm-hmm,
to make the charges of a staff member go away. They continue to sit in the House. Clearly, Judge Roy Moore looks like he may well be elected to the U.S. Senate seat in Alabama. And we have a president who remains president with all these allegations hovering over him.
Yes.
No one has been sacked by the Republicans.
Both men have, as we all know, a very fierce and loyal base. A lot of this base and others, when it comes to Trump, they say, well, this was just a guy who was, you know, sort of being a smart ass and making little comments when it came to the Billy Bush tape. This is a guy who where do these women come from? I mean, the fact is that everything that's happened to him and everything that's happened with Roy Moore, it's essentially duplicate of what's happened on the Democratic side to these men who are now out.
Now,
so are we going to, I mean, let's not be hypocritical here.
Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Now, are you prepared to use this bully pulpit of WABC, the number one news talk radio station in the nation, Juliet Huddy,
mm-hmm,
to break your confidentiality agreement, to break your non-disclosure agreement and the settlement you had with the Fox News Channel and Bill O'Reilly? This is the perfect time to hashtag me too here.
Listen, Curtis, you know my loyalty is to you, and my loyalty absolutely is to 77 WABC for being the company that stepped up and offered me a position freelancing here, which is wonderful. And, you know, because I have been on the beach, as they say.
Yes.
I am speaking with my attorney today, and I'm going to be discussing my future when it comes to my non-disclosure agreement,
ask the attorney if you can talk about it tomorrow on this show.
Well, that's going to be the question, Curtis.
Yeah.
I mean, you're kind of like, you know, buzz off and let me handle it.
All right, but wait a second. I want to take you back because told us a story a while back, and you didn't completely connect all the dots. But with the resignation...
Well, I connected the dots. I just didn't dot them out to you.
Right. But I think it requires a little fleshing out, because without Franken throwing himself on the sword today but taking parting shots at Judge Roy Moore and the President of the United States, Donald Trump.
Right.
You told us a story of a time you had a lunch with then-citizen Donald Trump, producer and host of The Apprentice.
I did. I spoke about this on this show, I believe,
yeah,
didn't
but,
I?
But you left out the main detail.
All right. Well, the reason I left this detail out was because I guess for many years I was a little bit nebulous when it came to what the intentions were and what really was happening. But I'm just going to give you the story. And I have somebody who can back it up. It was a friend of mine who was actually waiting for me nearby. But anyway, I was invited at the time. This was in 2005. I was on the Fox News Channel hosting a weekend show called Fox and Friends. And every weekend, apparently, Donald Trump would wake up and he would watch Fox and Friends. And
of course,
he became a big fan of mine.
His favorite show.
Yeah, so on the weekends. I guess he really liked the show on the weekends, too. He'd get up before he went to golf. So one day, I get a phone call from one of my colleagues, Brian Kilmeade, who said he had Trump on the phone, or he had just spoken to Trump, and Trump is going to be calling you. And I said, for what? He said, he's a huge fan. I said, well, that's crazy. So I remember I was at home, and I received a phone call from a woman who said, hi, this is Mrs. So-and-so calling from Mr. Trump's office, and you know, please hold. And I was like freaking out. I mean, this is a big deal. This is 2005. The Apprentice was number one. Anyway, he ends up inviting me to have lunch with him at Trump Tower. And I go over. I actually went over with a friend of mine, my friend Beth, who was hanging out at a bar just waiting for the lunch to be over, because we were just going to hang out and sort of, you know, talk about it afterwards. We went out to lunch. It was in Trump Tower downstairs in the main lobby area. He showed me around his office. You know, lots of people around, went downstairs to have lunch, had a nice lunch. He talked to me about potentially doing something that would be involved in a spinoff of The Apprentice. We went back up and he was with the security guy that is always with him or was always with him. We're in the elevator. We're going back up to drop Mr. Trump off at his office. And as the elevator reaches the top floor where he's getting off, he leans into me with this security guy with his back to me. Mr. Trump leans in to say goodbye, and what I thought, to give me a kiss on my cheek, but he kisses me right on the lips. Now, I was a little taken aback. I went downstairs. I was a little shaky. I called my friend. She came over, and I said, "What? I can't even believe what just happened here." My thing was, did I give him the impression that I was interested? I thought I was going there because he wanted to talk to me about a potential job.
He was married at the time.
No, he wasn't. Mm-mm.
Oh, he wasn't.
No,
okay.
And I don't even recall if he was. I think he, I maybe he was dating. I don't think I was really familiar with what his personal life
right.
was about. I just remember it was. I just thought, what was this lunch? And I'm thinking he couldn't be. He's not going to be interested in me. And maybe I did. I mean, maybe at the time I did think, well, he's got a girlfriend. And this isn't. So I, and I kept telling myself, well, maybe I just leaned the wrong way, you know. But now that I've heard all these other women, you know, and what they've talked about, it makes me think he was leaning in for a kiss.
This is the most important thing, because this determines whether he is the perv of all pervs.
All right, I'm going to. Well,
as I believe he is. Did he stick his tongue down your throat?
No, he did not.
Okay.
No.
All right.
And I will say, afterwards, he was. There was nothing ever. He never pushed anything else. I actually saw him many times afterwards, and you know, when he came on my show, he was actually really a great guy to me. Never, you know, never had a problem. Then one
never
day,
never hit on you after that.
No, and then one day, a few years later, when I had a syndicated show, he was getting ready to walk on set, or maybe he was leaving set. There was a studio audience, and he said this in front of the studio audience. We weren't on the air at the time. As he was walking out, he said, hey, and he points to me and he said, I tried hitting on her, but she blew me off. And everybody starts laughing, and the producers were all laughing, saying, oh my God, I can't believe you said that. So, I have to say, to me, looking back on that, I thought, okay, well, it's kind of a bummer. I thought I was going to be there going, you know, potentially getting a job.
I'm going to give him a pass on this because he
too.
Did not stick his tongue down your throat.
Well, but he also didn't try to, you know, to railroad me afterwards. The
right.
problem is that many, many years later, obviously during this whole O'Reilly situation, when Trump stuck up for O'Reilly saying that he doesn't believe these things. I mean, I'm not just, you know, suggesting that I perhaps am one of the O'Reilly accusers, but let's say hypothetically I was.
Of course you are.
You know, this man, Trump has known me for, I mean, it's not like he's my best friend, but I was really pissed off that he said what he said, you know, just sticking up
by the way,
you weren't there. You don't know what happened.
Add it to your list. Okay. So you got Donald Trump on your S list. Then you got Bernard McGurk and Sid Rosenberg because they've taken,
I love them,
they've
though.
Taken
I
up the cause of Bill O'Reilly. So this is great. We have enemies list here. Although I, who typically will not give Donald Trump the benefit of the doubt on this one, I give him the benefit of the doubt because, A, he didn't stick his tongue down your throat,
yeah.
And, B, he didn't follow it up aggressively.
I agree. 100%.
By sending you letters or notes or telephone calls and then trying to get together with you again.
He never tried to be alone with me ever again.
How do I know that you yourself, you didn't want to kiss Donald Trump right on the smackers, right on the lips? Just momentarily, it was sort of like, oh my God.
I gotta be honest with you, you know, at the time, this was in my, I was in my mid 30s. I was looking pretty good back then. I mean, look, it'd be nice to have a billionaire boyfriend, but,
How was he as a kisser? I mean, was it a sloppy kiss?
It wasn't that type of thing. I was just shocking because I knew him to be a germaphobe. So I was.
Well, that's
but that's my Trump story.
You see, that's how he's been able, and that's how I've given him a pass on many of the accusations, is he's a hardcore germaphobe who wouldn't even shake people's hands. He had to overcome a lot just to be able to go out on the campaign trail and begin to glad hand the way a typical politician would.
So there you go.
No.
There
excellent. You got it off your chest.
Got it. But now, you know, I'm not tomorrow,
after you meet with your lawyer today, I expect the exclusive breakage of your confidentiality and non-disclosure
clause. You know, I can't be rushed on these things.
Against Fox News Channel and O'Reilly.
Oh,
because this way O'Reilly can write another book, killing my manhood a second time. Anyway, let's go to Richard, who's calling from Staten Island. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here on WABC. Richard.
How you going, guys?
All right. What's up?
You know, I'm just thinking that this is going down a very slippery slope. I mean, I personally have a tendency. I was just at the diner this morning, and one of my favorite waitresses, and I call her sweetie, and not to be harassing her. It's in an ingratiating way. That's how I refer. I mean, where does this end? I mean, if you compliment a woman on the way she looks, is that deemed a sense of sexual harassment?
In my opinion, no, unless you're a boss and you're using this and you're, she's not responding to you properly. She asks you not to refer to her that way. And then he starts targeting her.
Well,
that's when I think it's a problem.
I had an issue years ago, and I installed a plexiglass door in my office, and I've made it a point that I have two girls that work for me, and they're plain looking as far as I'm concerned, and unfortunately I have to do that. I don't want any innuendos or the slightest suggestion that there could be a sexual event here, so it's I don't know.
Right, but Rich, calm yourself down from being flirtatious.
Well, yeah,
that
but,
has nothing to do yeah, with but, what we have heard the charges against Moore and the president and what Franken and Conyers have been charged with.
Curtis, please, don't cut me off here. Curtis, you have to admit we live in a with due process where you are innocent until proven.
Oh, please, come on. You really think Franken's innocent? He's already copped a plea to
it. You weren't there, and I was.
He said he was guilty.
I'm not talking. I'm not.
He said he was guilty. Conyers? You don't believe Conyers was guilty?
Conyers. I'm not talking about Conyers.
Well, what are you talking about?
I'm talking about Franken. All right. He wasn't allowed to present his case.
Well, what is the case? He acknowledged doing this to women. We got a picture of him groping a woman.
It might be out of context. What he thought.
Out of context?
They may think, obviously, it was harassment. Where do you...
Well, I think, Richard, you're making a point that a lot of people are echoing, which is, good God, I'm not doing this. I'm not talking to this woman with malice or with, you know, perversion in my head or heart or anywhere else. I'm merely just trying to
They are making excuses for perverts. When they do it in the subway, they get locked up. When they do it in the streets, they get locked up. If they're emotionally disturbed or homeless, we lock them up.
But he's talking about saying, hey, sweetie. And
when they're Harvey Weinstein, when they're Franken, when they're Kanye's, when they're Moore, when they're President Trump, they get away with it. They get away with it.
But I think a lot of men are terrified of the fact that if somebody launches an accusation against them, it's automatically, he's guilty.
Where in any of these cases has that been the case?
And the fact is that, you know, you hear about Dustin Hoffman. Well, he's still working. Nothing's going on. I mean, Sylvester Stallone, that faded away because the fact is, it sounds as though there aren't any other women out there that are corroborating this woman's story.
Everything percolates under the surface.
Percolates.
So these perverts, these marauders, these predators, they have not escaped what will be their final fate. To the phones we go. Juliet Huddy in the house. And it's Mike who's calling from Woodvine. Welcome to WABC, Mikey.
Hey, Curtis. Hey, how you doing, my good Bobby Cheech? I'm fellow Canarsian, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, appreciate that. I've had better days, but your point, Mike?
Yeah, my point is like this. Men shouldn't be touching women this way. But, you know, I think women are not walking around like the teachers in school when we went to PS-114. You know what I'm saying? I'm saying ladies are asking for
How are we asking for it?
Well, when a lady dresses in a mini skirt.
Oh, my God.
Why are you dressing that way? Let me ask, why does a lady dress that way?
I'll tell you what. Many women will tell you that we dress for each other. When we think something looks cute, we actually like the look of it. It's adorable. I don't wear mini skirts to try to, in fact, I don't wear mini skirts at all anymore because I'm over the age of 40, but, you wear it because it's cute. I love it. I like the look of it. I mean, you're really saying that I'm wearing it because I'm asking to be.
Are there? If you're living in a world of only women, if you're living like the Amazon women,
I shouldn't have to worry about you and your perverted mind.
Well,
frankly,
I don't think it's perverted. Men are men and women are women, and men are
so
attractive.
We're asking
that's
for
why
it.
Fashion. That's why fashion designers make the clothes to women. For women to look attractive.
Have you ever heard of Uggs?
In that way. That's not perverted. That's normal.
What's perverted is that we're asking for it. That's like criminal. That's sick.
It's not sick.
It is sick.
Does a woman look attractive in a miniskirt to a man? The answer is yes.
Okay, so that means that we're asking for you to become perverted with us.
To be attracted to a woman in a miniskirt, is that perverted?
I'm not saying it's perverted to be attractive. I'm not saying we do it because I'm not wearing miniskirts so that you're going to, you know, perv out on me.
Well, if a man, at the end of the day, maybe that's not your intention, but if you know there are men walking the street, and a man does do that, he's not a perv, he shouldn't do that, but yet in a certain way, he for sure shouldn't do that. I'm not saying a man should do that. It's disgusting.
What's bothering me is the line that you're asking for it. I think maybe you need to edit that and sort of create a new mantra because that's where it's getting me. Because I'm not asking for anything.
Maybe I could rephrase it in a nicer way, but at the end of the day, it does cause a man to be attracted. And listen, men aren't all saints. If a man's working in an office with a lady for X amount of time, the X amount of hours in a day, and he has to keep looking at her dress that way, it's gonna get him going. And this is what's gonna happen. And he's wrong. And she, in a certain way, she is somewhat of an accomplice to the crime.
Oh my God. Curtis, please take over. I'm gonna start screaming. I'm gonna lose my mind.
Let's go to Jimmy in Brooklyn. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here at WABC. Jimmy?
You're basically telling people out there... Okay, hold on one second, Jimmy. You're basically telling people out there that we are asking for it, so then it's our fault. We're culpable in men doing perverted things, men leaning in and kissing us when we don't ask for it, men touching us when we don't ask for it, because we're asking for it by the outfits that we wear, whether it's a cute little jean skirt and a sweater or whether it's high heels... And, you know, black leather pants. We're asking for it. It's our fault. That's just crap.
Is that true, Jimmy?
You know, I would have to agree with Juliet on that.
God.
You know, well, let me just make a quick point. Curtis, number one, I'm still waiting for you to give me a call so you can... I can put you to work on one of my trucks and do the route, the garbage route.
Oh, I love this guy.
That'll happen after I go through my surgery next Wednesday. We'll do it in the beginning of the year.
Okay, that being said, Juliet, you know, I I went to James Madison High School, which 20 years after I graduated from it, there have been several incidents with female teachers having sex with male students. Not that that has anything with to do with what I'm about to say. When I was in junior high school, by the way, I went to Andres Huddy Junior High School.
Andre Huddy?
A-N-D-R-I-E-S was the man's first name, and his last name was Huddy, but it was spelled H-U-D-D-E.
Oh, okay.
On Nostrand Avenue and Avenue L, Kurt, oh. I don't even know where that is.
Yeah, well, right now, Jimmy, I'm going to have to let you go because we have our news headlines and updates have to be given to us by Deborah Valentine.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa, 77 WABC.
Every girl crazy about a shot as me.
Curtis.
Yes, Julia.
You're looking quite lovely today.
Well, in fact, I have made history. In 26 years of broadcasting, I have always worn my Red Beret Red Sateen jacket for a portion of the show, if not for the start of the show.
I have not seen, not only have I not seen a beret, I have not seen red on you. You're wearing a suit, and if you go to Twitter, you can see Curtis is wearing a nice blue suit.
That's right, and if you can go to the Curtis Sliwa Facebook page at WABC, you'll see it posted, me wearing a suit for the very first time on air here at WABC. First time in 26 years of broadcasting.
You look outside, you might see pigs flying by your window.
Yeah, a little Pink Floyd action there. But the question that we're posing to everybody is, why would I have been dressed up in a suit? Because that's just not what I do.
A legal thing. You have to present yourself as somebody...
Might be.
Stable. So I take yourself out of the identity of the Guardian Angels.
Might be.
Are you going to tell us?
No, because I want the people to go on their Facebook site and obviously post why they think I was wearing a jacket and tie. I'll give you an example. Mm-hmm. I was sitting there for 3 hours during a grilling. Very intense.
Definitely lawyers involved.
Very adversarial. And then they had to bring a supervisor out wearing a bow tie. And anybody who knows me, who's heard me before, know I don't trust anybody who wears a bow tie, from George Will to Screwy Louis Farrakhan.
You know, bow ties, though, became kind of a little hipster thing recently.
That makes me hate them even more. Because I despise hipsters and millennials.
Yes,
so anyway, they bring the supervisor out, and he really, like, drills down on me. He doubles down on me. So it was very, very intense, very volatile.
So we want our listeners to try and guess where exactly you were today.
Exactly.
What will they get if they guess right?
Hey, it won't be a sexual harassment charge like Matt Lauer got, right? Well, guess where Matt is today, right? Well, nobody's going to be guessing where he is any longer other than playing golf out at the Hamptons.
I have a hint, though, for people. Maybe it's not a hint. I don't know. But I've got some color to sort of maybe help people out. Potentially, this could be just a red herring. But speaking of red herrings, you are also eating Twizzlers. By the way, you listen to the show, red Twizzlers. But if you listen to the show, you know that Curtis has not been eating anything except for very bland turkey sandwiches on white bread and drinking red Gatorade. It's the only flavor, and that's the only food he's been able to eat. However, today you've come in, and I haven't seen you eat anything, but there's a giant bag of Twizzlers, and it's mowed through about half of it.
Licorice. I decided I was going to do that, even though I'm on IV, still have the IV in my arm.
And you have surgery in less than a week.
Wednesday, that's right.
Somehow this is a good idea to you.
The clock is ticking. When finally I deal with the colitis and ileitis that is now blown into full-blown Crohn's disease, so I go under the knife at Columbia Presbyterian. But I've decided, hey, if I'm going to go out with a bang, I'm going out eating licorice.
Whoa. So you're actually, are you concerned that you might not make it through this surgery?
Oh, no, I'll be fine. And you know
what?
If
you go out with a bang, what does that mean then?
If I go out with a bang, if I lose this grapple with the Grim Reaper, I've had many grapples. I've lived a great life, right?
But I feel like you're sort of hastening that process by eating something like that, which goes directly into the area.
Makes me feel good. I'm entitled to this because.
Here's what I would do. I would actually go on a trip. Like, go go over to Italy for a couple days.
No.
That'll make you feel
good. No. Nothing could make me feel better than earlier today before I had that grueling sit-down with Bowtie Boy than for me to open up New York's hometown newspaper, The Daily News, and see that Lenny Lopate, who I shared a microphone with over at WNYC briefly, has now been charged with being a perv by the pretentious a-holes who run WNYC.
Oh.
And he was grabbed off the air yesterday, not permitted to broadcast any longer. And boy, let me tell you, I'm dancing the whore in Tarantella because he's on the same time we're on. We're on 12 to 3. He was on 12 to 2 after Brian Lehrer at WNYC. And let me give you just a little bit of flavor of the artsy, fartsy, cultural, I know more than any of you, Lenny is a pervert Lopate.
Some scholars of American politics argue that Donald Trump is an aberration, describing him as an opportunist who's capitalizing on political and economic polarization. Others see him as a force for reform in the Republican Party at a time when many voters across the U.S. are deeply disaffected and dissatisfied with government.
What is your problem with what he just said there?
You could just see the sarcasm dripping from his lips.
I was actually being put to sleep. That voice is it's a beautiful, lulling voice.
Unlike others who are charged with perving their co-workers or their co-host or co-hostess.
Right.
He's charged with perving his guests.
So apparently multiple people, too. And he's saying, I don't know what you're talking about. This is absolutely ridiculous. But apparently they're saying, and he's asking for details, but apparently people there are saying they're not going to give him any details.
He knows he's a perv.
He said, this may just be the current environment, but this is kind of overkill.
He knows he's a perv. He knows he's a predator.
Do you know him to be that way?
Oh, let me tell you about Lenny Lopate.
Okay.
In 1994, I was fired here with Lisa, who was my partner and my wife at the time, doing morning drive radio, Angels in the Morning. And she went her way, I went my way. At the time, Rudy Giuliani had just been elected mayor, and one of the many functions he had was overseeing WNYC Radio, which was owned by the city of New York at that time. It is now a public foundation. So New York City has this big stick at the time that at that time, in the early 90s, radio stations were paying millions of dollars for a good stick, a good broadcasting tower.
Yeah.
And so Rudy says, I want to be able to showcase this and sell it, you know, into the private sector. Why should the city of New York be running a radio station? It's costing us money. Would you come over and do an afternoon show there? Because, you know, there are no commercials. So
They know you can talk, too.
Right. 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock I was on and talking about neighborhood issues of the five boroughs.
Which is, you're the perfect person to do
right.
that.
That's my sweet spot.
That's your thing. It's your gig.
Well, there was an insurrection in the ranks of the liberals and progressives and pretentious a-holes over at WNYC.
Because they brought you over?
Yes. They didn't want me there. They felt I was being forced upon them by Rudy Giuliani. And leading the pack was Lenny Lopate. So he had to introduce me on the air before my first show because he was on before me. So he comes on the air right before I come on, and he goes, oh, by the way, up next, Curtis Sliwa, for his first broadcast here, he was forced upon us by the mayor of the city of New York, Rudy Giuliani.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, yeah.
What a jerk.
Curtis Sliwa, high school dropout.
Oh, my God.
Who's best known for reading comic books and magazine covers.
Oh, that's – listen – I mean, he may not like you, but that is way over the line. That's just classless and idiotic and so narrow-minded.
So he's doing the transition.
Child.
And I say, hey, Lenny, stay around a few minutes here, pal. Sit down. You're from Brooklyn, right? I'm from Brooklyn. And so then he decided to take the bait. So we're talking about our backgrounds. You know, he's college educated. He's cultured. You know, he's...
He talks about the arts.
The arts. And theater and movies and books. Okay, that's his thing. And so then he starts bearing down on me. You're a high school dropout, this, that. And I said, yeah. And Lenny, you know, some people, they've gone on to higher education. Others haven't, but they have street smarts. And then he hears that, street smarts. He goes, what are you trying to say? I don't have street smarts? I know you. You went to a prestigious prep school, Brooklyn Prep. They kicked you out. I went to Eastern District High School with 4,000 other guys. I lived in a six-floor walk-up in Williamsburg where we had a shared toilet down the end of that hall. And the guy is absolutely going apoplectic. He's going berserk. He's trying to out-ghetto me. You don't try to out-ghetto me. So we had a complete blowout on the airwaves.
Now, can I ask you, though? Because, you know, you're good radio. You're good TV. You're good talk. Mm. Now, you know that sometimes sometimes we can amp things up a little bit, you know, like a shtick. This was not a shtick.
Oh, no. He came right into my trap. And I just decimated him. Now, naturally, all the callers, they call up management. You got to get them out of here. We're not going to donate to the radio station because it's caller-sponsored radio.
Oh, wow.
So they said, well, let's see how Curtis does during the first fundraising drive. So for a week, everybody has to do their pitch. And the callers, because there are no commercials, they make donations. So I wasn't doing too well, as you could imagine. But the old gray lady in the New York Times printed the results in their Saturday edition, and they gave me an extra zero at the end of my accumulated total, which meant I raised more than Brian Lehrer and more than Lenny Lopate. So naturally,
figuratively, not literally.
Right, but they came on the air on Monday, and they went absolutely crazy. They said, lies, how could they? He didn't raise anywhere near the money that our respected sponsors and supporters have given to both of our shows. So when I came on at 2 o'clock, I said, excuse me, ladies and gentlemen, but I was always taught in growing up, the old gray lady, the New York Times never makes mistakes, right?
Mm-hmm.
They lead and everyone else follows.
Mm-hmm.
So am I to believe the New York Times was wrong? Well, the New York Times got so much pressure. They not only did a retraction, they did it in big font, you know, with the correct performance. But the damage was already done. And naturally, I said revisionism of the worst type because I obviously lean right where everyone else leans left here. This was done purposely to try to sabotage my efforts here at WNYC.
Wait, so how long were you there?
I was there for 7 months.
Seven of the longest months of your life, I bet.
Almost as bad as the time I was stuck in marriages. Almost as bad.
Yet you kept going back to them.
But then I eventually worked my way back to WABC doing overnights. Now, just to give you an update on this, Lenny Lopate. Recently, right, I haven't talked to this guy since I left there, and we always had bad words towards one another. Now, that is in 1995, right? He actually texts somebody. This is in October 31st of 2017. Curtis Lewa used to work at WNYC with me. I don't think I could ever trust anything he says. So guess what, Lenny? Who turns out to be correct as you get knocked off the air because you're perving on your guests?
Yeah, Lenny.
You molester.
You're cultured.
You're pretentious. You think you know more than anyone else. College graduate called me a high school dropout. You a-hole, 1-800-848-WABC. Enjoy your time at home listening to this broadcast.
Yeah.
1-800-848-9222.
Curtis Lewa. Boom! The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Lewa, the Guardian Angels, was over there.
Curtis Lewa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Lewa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Lewa.
Curtis Lewa.
Curtis Lewa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa, 77 WABC.
Yes! You know where we're playing this music?
Is this me dancing the horror?
I bet you danced
the sacking of Lenny Lopate over at WNYC.
No.
Hashem. Good job, Hashem.
No. The reason we're playing that is, I'd like to discuss the slurring, Slurgate, as some people are calling it, yesterday with the president when he was making a very important speech. Everybody was like, what is going on? I mean, people were saying he was doing drugs and all sorts of things. The White House officially says, no, he was just, his mouth was parched. He had dry mouth.
Oh, just, he didn't use enough Polident.
It certainly seemed dentures. Like maybe he was, yeah, because he was doing the thing with his tongue kind of pushing towards the lower lip. So if he has dentures, who cares? He's getting up there.
Hey, look,
no big deal.
Poor George Washington, our first president, suffered with extreme mouth pain, tooth pain.
Well, he had wood teeth.
Yeah, his entire life. So, hey, as we're high atop Madison Square Garden and the great facilities provided to us in order to do this broadcast to all of you by NJDiet.com, so what? If Trump had a few denture issues, he's what, in his 70s? Hey, that's okay.
Unfortunately, though, you know, it was a very important speech yesterday. So this kind of the denture slash whatever it was issue got a little bit of the headline grabbing. But not if you talk to Arabs and Muslims across the world. They're like, wait a minute, what? So if you haven't heard by now, and I'm sure you probably already have heard, the U.S., according to Donald Trump yesterday in his speech, says that we have the intention to move our embassy to Jerusalem from Tel Aviv, recognizing the city of Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, which has incited some very unhappy feelings within the Arab and Muslim community. They feel as though it is an incendiary move and something in a very volatile region that should not be done. Some say this is not good for the peace process, but the president says, wait a minute, what peace process?
After more than two decades of waivers, we are no closer to a lasting peace agreement between Israel and the Palestinians. It would be folly to assume that repeating the exact same formula would now produce a different or better result. Therefore, I have determined that it is time to officially recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel.
Well, all right. He went on to say that, look, I mean, this is something that down the road will bring lasting peace. Although, will he be elected in a few years? This is something that's going to take a long time. It's not going to be a quick fix. And will it be something that will have longevity? Let's listen to a little bit more about the president and what he says.
This decision is not intended in any way to reflect a departure from our strong commitment to facilitate a lasting peace agreement. There will, of course, be disagreement and dissent regarding this announcement. But we are confident that ultimately, as we work through these disagreements, we will arrive at a peace and a place far greater in understanding and cooperation.
Go ahead, knock yourself out. Go ahead, try. Many have tried before.
Well, I mean, I'm curious to hear what's actually happening locally. And luckily enough, you have not only Juliette Huddy on in the studio here with you, Curtis Sliwa, but now you have my sibling, my younger sibling, John Huddy, who is actually in, I believe he's in Jerusalem. I think he's in a cab. John Huddy, who was a Middle East correspondent for Fox News for several years until, well, let's just say he unceremoniously left, and we don't have to discuss that right now. But John is joining us on the phone right now from a cab somewhere in Israel.
And I'm actually going into one of the settlements. Right? First of all, hello.
Hello, John.
I enjoyed the music, by the way, after the break.
Yes, you become very familiar with it. My brother actually just got married to an Israeli girl. She's pregnant. They're due later on this year.
That's right.
John, meet Curtis.
Yeah, hey, Curtis. How are you?
L'chaim, l'chaim. Hey, shalom, shalom.
Shalom, nishma.
So what's going on down there? This is a pretty big announcement. It's gotten a lot of attention, obviously, and not everybody's happy about this. But you've been there for quite a few years. You kind of always have been able to sort of, despite what the media is reporting, you have the inside scoop because you see what's being reported, and you're actually seeing what the people are saying. On both sides.
Yeah. Well, I was actually in the Old City, and I live very close to the Old City in downtown Jerusalem. And I went in, you know, do some work today to the Western Wall to, you know, overlooking the Temple Mount, you know, Dome of the Rock, Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. And it was quiet. You know, it was really, it almost looked like business as usual. There was kind of somewhat of a celebratory atmosphere, you could say, at the Western Wall. There wasn't a very intense security presence. I mean, look, it's Jerusalem, so there's always a security presence, and that is some, you know, when most people come here to visit, that's one of the first things they see are the number of IDF soldiers and border police and municipal police.
Yeah.
But nothing out of the ordinary, honestly. And that is how it's been throughout the afternoon. People are out. It's very cold right now, actually. It's dropped down. So, you know, there's not as many people kind of in the downtown area. But among Israelis, and look, my wife is Israeli, you know, my father-in-law, we were watching you know, the coverage, and I was following it very closely last night and throughout the evening today. And as Israelis, they're happy to hear this. The question is, what is going to be the effect now? I mean, will we see an intifada like Hamas is calling for to start on Friday? They have apparently a time schedule.
Yeah. So it's giving everybody time to leave or come into the city.
Right, after Friday prayer on Friday. You know, so are we going to see the violence? There's certainly the potential for that. All it takes, as we know in this region, as we've seen, is a spark for things to erupt. You know, that's what happened, you may recall, in 2014 when I first got out here, Operation Protective Edge, the war in Gaza.
Mm-hmm.
It started with the abduction of three Israeli teens who were murdered. Then there was a reprisal killing, and then everything deteriorated from there, and it became a war, and the longest, actually, in Israel's history, 51 days.
So
now, what's going to happen at this point? I think my feeling is we'll probably see some violence. I think there'll probably be some attacks, mostly at border checkpoints, like the checkpoint we just went through, and I'm actually in one of the settlements right now, a settlement called Gilo. But I'm not seeing a huge presence. We'll probably see some attacks, a rash of violence. But will it get to a level of a third intifada? You know, I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure about it, because you go into the old city and people are carrying on, the Palestinians are carrying on as business as usual. They're selling, you know, in the Muslim quarter, the stores are open.
Can I just jump in? Because I think a lot of my friends, a lot of people that I've talked to, they think that if you're in Israel, you're only going to see Israelis. You don't see Palestinians walk around. They're you know, reserved for a certain area. That's not the case at all. I mean, you're out at cafes and there's Palestinians and Israelis and everybody's coexisting.
Yeah. Yeah, this is true. Look, my father-in-law, he lives on one of the largest settlements, and he employs Palestinian workers from the West Bank. And so, yes, the people coexist. People work together, Arabs and Israelis. But there's definitely the area, you know, parts of the West Bank that are hot spots. You know, when things go wrong, it could go wrong very quickly.
Right.
And when things erupt, it can happen very quickly. The Trump administration right now and White House officials, you know, their stance, and you may have been talking about this earlier, I'm not sure how much you've gone into it, is that there could be short-term anger, but in the long run, it will bring about peace. And that's the Israeli, Prime Minister Netanyahu, that's what he's been saying. Ultimately, this will bring about peace. Well, I think a lot of people are raising an eyebrow to that, and many people aren't that hopeful, including other world leaders, and certainly the Arab world. You know, Arab leaders are saying, you know, like Mahmoud Abbas, the Palestinian Authority president, that this is going to derail any peace talks, any peace negotiation, any peace agreement. And then you have the more fiery rhetoric from guys like, Recep Erdogan, Turkey's president, who's saying that this will lead the region, the president's decision will lead the region into a, quote, ring of fire. And then, as I said earlier, Hamas calling for an intifada. Whether or not people follow that remains to be seen.
All right, but John, yeah. Assuming that things follow their normal order, as you mentioned, tomorrow is the Muslim day of prayer, Jummah. They assemble at the mosques. The imams give fiery sermons. They go out into the streets. They'll start burning tires, throwing rocks. It'll start chaos in some places. They could then end up being triggered off in other parts of the Middle East. What is the point of moving
maybe,
an embassy?
Maybe not.
It's only, what, a half-hour drive from mm-hmm. Tel Aviv to Jerusalem? What's the point of moving an embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem? What's the big deal?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, that's really the prime question. I think it's more symbolic than anything. A lot of the business administratively gets done at the consulates anyway. Like the consulate, for instance, in Jerusalem, if somebody needs to get a visa or if I need to renew my passport, you go to the consulate. I don't go to the embassy. You know, so administratively, those things happen at the consulate. And by the way, if they were to indeed move the embassy, they would likely, the consulate here in Jerusalem, administrative building in the southern part of Jerusalem, would become the new embassy because it's already fortified like an embassy. It already has walls and a high level of security. But to answer, it's a great question. You know, it's a great question. I think it's symbolic more than anything. And as far as...
But symbolic of what, though?
Well, because that was the 1995 law that was passed basically said that the embassy needs to be moved to Jerusalem because Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. But no president has wanted to say that. No president has wanted to follow through with that because of exactly what we're seeing now, because of the concerns about violence leading to an intifada, leading to a war.
Well, I hope that you stay safe. You've managed to stay safe for the last three or so years, and I am greatly appreciative of that. And I wish you the best. You're doing some other work today, which I'm happy to hear about. My little brother, I love you, and stay safe.
Oh,
by the way,
John, how often did Juliet beat you up and hit you and take advantage of you when you were growing up?
Constantly.
Please, whatever.
She was very abusive.
You see? Uh-huh. But, yeah. You see?
Yeah, well, yeah, and then...
Now, Juliet, listen, I love my sister, and I'm proud of her. She's the best big sister a brother could have. And
You're such a liar. He's so full of crap right now, it's not even funny.
Even halfway across the world, I listen to you guys, and you have a great show. So I'm happy, I'm delighted to be on, and, you know, call anytime.
All right.
Happy to help. But we'll see what happens.
We'll stay in touch, I'm sure. All right.
Well, the question to our audience is...
Goodbye, John.
The importance of moving an embassy, half hour away from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, is it worth all the potential mishigash, all the trouble? Or is it just finally a president living up to his word, which is what Donald Trump clearly has done? 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. To the phones we go. Juliet Huddy in the house.
Such happy music.
Oscar, calling from Westchester. Welcome to WABC, Oscar.
Hey, how are you? It's always a pleasure to speak with you. You are fantastic on the radio. You really are. You make my day. But now, I'm an evangelical, anti-Trump evangelical. I actually cannot believe that there are evangelicals that would be pro-Trump, because it's no way to confirm his statements with the Bible, right? But his decision yesterday was a very good decision, which is one of the reasons why we got a Trump. Because too many times politicians say they're going to do, they never do it. This guy is doing what he's saying he was going to do.
Okay, so, but Oscar, on that level, that is correct. He is finally pulling the trigger on what many previous candidates and presidents have said they would do. But what does it accomplish?
No, absolutely. I don't think the end is a good end, and I think it's going to create a lot of problems in the Middle East. But my point is this. The reason Trump got in is because people were tired of people saying things and not doing them. And he's doing it to the detriment of the country, but he's doing it.
That was my point. That's a frightening thought. But I see what you're saying, but the fact is that this is going to be something that will be a long process. And so you're right. He is saying he is backing his words
you
up.
See,
but
when you're in Israel, it's like you're in Jersey. It would be like saying we're moving our embassy from Trenton to Newark, New Jersey.
Not if you're living there. I mean, to people there, Jerusalem is, you know, obviously the Holy Land. It's so close to the settlements. I mean, it's just issue.
What's the big deal?
I kind of back you up on that. But.
I mean, it's been in Tel Aviv all these years. What's the next? We're going to move the Knesset to Jerusalem. We're going to move all other. So what? So you move them all to Jerusalem at great expense, I might add. And what does that achieve?
It's the same reason. I mean, people hold on to symbolism.
You think Palestinians and Jews are going to get together any better than they've already gotten together?
I personally don't. I don't get it either. But I mean, I'm being told by our listeners that this is a big symbolic move.
Yes, symbolism with a lot of money that's going to have to cover these costs. Anyway, let's go to Lee in Flushing. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here in WABC. Lee.
Hi. How are you? You guys are great. I just wanted to clarify why it's such a big deal. The reason is because in 1967, when they had the war, Israel annexed all of Jerusalem. So when the world doesn't recognize Jerusalem as part of Israel, it's an extremely big deal. It's the capital of their country that they fought for. They won it fair and square.
Well, Lee, if in fact that's the case, why don't they move their Knesset there? See? Quiet. See, if that's your parliament, if that's your house of government,
then why is your...
Why is it the Jews themselves, the Israelis, do not actually say, you know, we're moving our Knesset to Jerusalem?
Can somebody answer that question?
Yeah, because it'll set it off. Because you know it'll set it off. And you know, it's not just Palestinians and Arabs. The Catholics don't want that. The Vatican doesn't want that. It's a land grab in Jerusalem. Remember, the Catholic Church has very little land in Jerusalem, so they want to become a player. It's the Orthodox Christians who have a lot of the land. So the Greek Orthodox, when you go there, the Serbian Orthodox, all the Orthodox faiths, they have little, like, they have, they have seminaries, they have land. They can't even get along. In the very church where supposedly Jesus was buried.
Yeah.
They actually have battles amongst one another when they're bringing their followers there, all different groups just combating one another, so much so that the Christians can't get along. That guess who opens up the church each and every day and closes the church?
Who?
A Muslim-Palestinian family, because they couldn't find a Christian that they would trust in not taking one side or the other side amongst the many Orthodox faiths there. And I'm speaking Orthodox Christian faiths who do their pilgrimages there.
Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa.
Curtis Lewa.
77 WABC.
Curtis. What's up with the music?
Well, it's certainly not as a result of your brother, John, who gave us that live update from one of the settlements outside of Jerusalem. It has to do with, it can almost be a family feud here now. Who was it? It was Richard Lawton, who I think used to be the former host of Family Feud.
Dawson,
I'm sorry. And now it is the comedian who couldn't remember Miss Universe, Steve Harvey. He's the host. They should almost have a political family feud show in which you have Democrats on one side, Republicans on the other side, as they defend their own family, because it really has become very, very tribal. Earlier today, we saw the announcement that Senator Al Franken will leave in a few weeks his Senate seat in Minnesota. He is resigning. The day before, it was John Conyers, the Altacaca.
Another Democrat.
Right. Reigning Democrat there, who from his hospital bed said he would be retiring on the spot, hoping to leave his seat to his son, John Conyers III, who himself has been in his own problems, having handcuffed and beaten and abused his girlfriend in Los Angeles, but was never charged.
Well, something tells me that's not going to happen, but leaving two very important seats open...
Two seats open, but they'll be filled by Democrats.
Well, you never know. I mean, one of the heads of the GOP in Minnesota is saying this could be a great opportunity for Republicans to fill that seat.
But likely it'll be Democrats. But you see, the Democrats have decided we are going to seize this issue. Abuse against women, fellow workers, and others. And we're going to take the high road by sacking our own.
So this is not done altruistically. This is just them trying to basically using Franken and Conyers as their sacrificial lambs.
I think some of the women, House members and the women senators are very strong in their opinion that Franken and Conyers should have gone because they're pervs.
But I
don't believe the mass majority of the members in the House, the Democrats or senators, do. I think they're just counting the numbers and saying we can seize the high ground.
Well, I think they're shaking in their boots, by the way, because CNN and The Washington Post apparently are going to be exposing 20 or 30 Congress folks, men, who have been involved in sexual harassment charges.
Oh, they should.
Oh, yeah.
They should. The
Breaking
problem,
news.
Though, is that you just heard Deb Valentine play the cut, the Speaker of the House, leader of the Republicans in the House, Ryan. This is what he said in the aftermath of Al Franken's announcement that he was resigning.
We want to identify what reforms are needed to change the way things work. In addition to just better policies to protect women, we also need a real culture change. We need to recognize that this is a pervasive problem that women face, not just here in Congress, but through every industry. Yep. And this really is a watershed moment, and it needs to lead to lasting and positive change.
Okay, so is he speaking post the announcement of Al Franken, or is he talking about cleaning up the problems in his own family, meaning the Republican Party? Because let's look at the ledger scale. John Conyers gone, although begrudgingly. He wasn't going to go. He said he didn't do anything wrong.
Al Franken, I mean, he ends up in the hospital. I think it's, you know, his body is telling him it's time to go, not just the people telling him it's time to
go. Yeah, but I think that was more just to hide out from everyone. Al Franken has acknowledged most of what he's been accused of, although he says he doesn't necessarily always remember it the way the women claim it happened. But
I have to say, I appreciate the fact that he's admitting that he has been a sleazebag.
Well, it's very similar to the comedian who, when he was exposing
Louis
his manhood,
C.K.
right, Louis C.K., instead of arguing it or claiming I didn't remember it exactly the same way, he said, yep, the women are right, I'm wrong, see ya, sayonara.
I think when you do that, especially if you're in a position like Louis C.K. Or Al Franken, you probably, especially if you do it early on, you're probably doing it with the awareness that there are going to be plenty of other people who are coming out, so why not just take yourself out of the mix as soon as possible?
So now, is there a double standard? Because Congresswoman Debbie Dingell, Democrat of Michigan, is talking about Congressman Farenthal of Texas, who settled for $84,000. That's a lot of money, a taxpayer's money, to make one of his staff people not go forward with sexual harassment charges. He should step down, people are saying. How could you not tell him to step down? Although none of the Republicans, neither Paul Ryan or anyone else, is pressuring him to do that. Then there is the Republican congressman from Texas, Joe Barton, who was
flashing. He's a senior Republican in that state, by the way.
Right. Was flashing his manhood, taking pictures of it, and sending it out to women. And that went viral. Exactly what Anthony the Weiner Wiener was doing. And nothing has happened to him, although he says he will not run for reelection. We see now the pressure will be on if Judge Roy Moore wins in Alabama. Will McConnell and the other Republicans seat him, or will they gruel him in an ethics commission hearing and then force him out of the Senate? And then naturally there's the president himself, Donald Trump, who has a number of allegations still pending against him for perving on women. I'm looking at the ledger here, and I'm saying to myself, yep, the Democrats have seized the higher ground on this.
Check.
What are the Republicans doing about their own house? And you now have a group of conservatives, evangelicals, who have emerged, wrote a op-ed piece in the Washington Post, and have suggested that Judge Thomas himself, Chief Justice Thomas, Clarence Thomas, resign from the bench based on the allegations that have been made against him in his confirmation hearings a while back, chaired by Senator Joe Biden of Delaware. His confirmation went through, although Anita Hill was his accuser.
Well, Anita Hill looks like a hero now. I mean, people are looking back at her and just going, man, you know, she was a couple decades too early.
Well, let's find out from our listeners here. Is there a double standard in full effect? Should the Republicans match the Democrats?
Or are you thinking? Are you thinking the Democrats are just jumping in? They're too quick to, you know, commit destruction of their own because they're trying to sacrifice these guys because they want more out. They want Donald Trump out.
Let's go to Tony, who's calling from Brooklyn. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here on WABC. Tony,
how are you guys? Listen, my point is, if for argument's sake, 10 years tomorrow, somebody has a press conference in front of your building, and they accuse either one of you of doing something, let's say 10 years ago. Oh, I was at a party, and Curtis was there, and I met Curtis, and there is proof if you find out that the both of you were there. And this girl says, you know, I went into the room to get my coat because I was leaving, and Curtis followed me in, and he stuck his tongue down my throat, and he put his hand up my dress. Then a day later, another girl comes and says, you know, I belong to a gym, and it's proof that Curtis belongs. And when I went to go in the locker, Curtis followed me, and he watched me while I took off my clothes. Now, there's no positive proof. A victim is a victim is a victim, and they should be vindicated. And the person that does something weird should get the crap beat out of them. But in the case where somebody arbitrarily guns for you and does something like that, what in the name of God do you do?
All right,
do
but Tony, that's understood. That's a broader discussion of these kinds of charges. But now that Conyers has retired and Franken admitting his misdeeds is resigning, you got two Republicans sitting in the House who have acknowledged doing bad things. One who
settled. Get rid of them.
Republicans are not suggesting that.
Well, you know, this all started, and you know for a fact, during the election, they were gunning for Trump big time, and they, because they were so obnoxiously thinking that grandma was going to win, that it shocked the living daylights out of him. And now...
Well, I think what happened, Tone, the best thing that ever happened to Donald Trump was he was running against Hillary Clinton, who was always defending the perv of all pervs, her husband, Bill Clinton. So it canceled out. When these women came forward and said, oh, Donald Trump perved me, a lot of people said, wait a second, I'm going to elect the woman who's going to bring the perv of all pervs back into the White House if we elect her. So their attitude was, no.
Let me ask you guys a question. Do you think things would have been different for Donald Trump had the election been held now, after all of these allegations have come out against the Harvey Weinsteins, the Bill O'Reillys,
against
the Charlie Roses,
Hillary
and I'm sorry?
If Hillary was running?
What do you think would have happened?
No, I think that you would have had the same outcome. People hate Hillary, and they didn't want the perv back in the White House. I mean, let's face it. Whatever Donald Trump has been charged with pales in comparison to what we know that Bill Clinton did before he was president of the United States and what he did in the White House. So why would you want to bring the perv back into the White House? Somebody that Hillary could not control to begin with. Why would you give him, again, access to the interns, to all the other women who were working there? You'd be out of your mind. And I think that's what went through people's minds is, okay, Trump may be a perv, but we know the perv that Hillary's married to and she's
enabled
him.
Okay, but see, you're using that's the same argument that people are using to stick up for Roy Moore down in Alabama. The same exact thing. Well, you know what? He may be. He may have hit on girls that were too young and all the. There's this girl. We actually are starting to believe
him. If you have an equal standard,
the alternative is the baby killer.
They got to go. There are more than enough Republicans and Democrats who can take these people's positions. Somehow the country will survive without Conyers and Franken and Judge Roy Moore. Let's go to Ethan in Long Island. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here at WABC. Ethan.
Hi, guys. Good afternoon. First of all, Curtis, just want to correct you. The Knesset is in Jerusalem, by the way. It's not in Tel Aviv. But in terms of the Roy Moore thing, the Republicans are kind of putting up a double standard over here, and they should just clean house, get rid of all these guys, and get some morality back into politics.
Right, but if you notice, Paul Ryan was so quick to comment about Al Franken leaving today, and yet there were reporters who were asking him, but what about your fellow Republicans here in Texas?
Yeah, get rid of them. Get rid of them.
Not
no,
even
get them out of there.
Sorry, no
it's
more
just,
questions.
It's just hurting the Republicans. It's hurting the conservative movement.
Right, and we're talking about one guy we know is guilty because he paid off $84,000 of our tax dollars to make the woman stay quiet. And we know Joe Barton is guilty because we see the proof. It's his schlong, right? Hey, Joe, is this your schlong? Yeah, it's my schlong. I did it. Why are they still? How come they haven't? No one's moved to.
You said
sack
Barton,
them?
Not Biden, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Why haven't they moved to sack him? Right.
I think. Ask the Republicans that. If there are Republicans out there, give us a call and let us know why.
Well,
what's going
it's
on?
It's the party of family values. I constantly hear Savage and Levin say, you know, it's the
Bill
party,
O'Reilly,
the party of Sodom and Gomorrah, and you know, the Democrats. Okay, they may well be, but if you're the party of family values, wouldn't you be the first to get rid of these pervs?
Well, I think you. I mean, that's a rhetorical question. I think we don't have to answer it. I think the answer is already there.
1-800-848-WABC.
Curtis Sliwa.
Boom!
The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa
from
the Guardian Angels was over there.
Curtis Sliwa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
Christina Carvey, Nora Dunn, Bill Hart.
When are we going to get to Al Franken here? What?
Oh,
come
Justin.
On. Where's his name? Franken.
Al Franken. We knew it was coming.
Juliet Huddy in the house today. Yeah. As we are high atop Madison Square Garden, the great facilities provided to us in order to do this broadcast to all of you by NJDiet.com.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw the comedian extraordinaire, a man who was made famous by his appearances on Saturday Night Live, who then benefited from the fact that the U.S. Senator of Minnesota at the time, strong Democrat, liberal, progressive that he was, got up into a Cessna plane, was traveling.
Carnahan?
No, wait. I'm teasing you here.
Sorry.
Got in a Cessna plane, and unfortunately the door blew off, and he ended up perishing in the crash that followed. And because they had to scramble, you know, it's not like he died. He was an elderly U.S. senator, but he was he would have been the younger version of Bernie the Altacaca Sanders and Elizabeth Warren if he was still sitting in the Senate. He perished, and Al Franken's career suddenly emerged as the leading U.S. Senatorial candidate to replace him. And then he was elected in a contentious race.
Mm-hmm.
But he was sitting there. And just assuming that, you know, he would move on possibly and be considered a presidential candidate. And then the allegations kept pouring forth.
And it was pretty extraordinary having him, you know, go from Stuart Smalley, you know, you like me, gosh darn it, to becoming, you know, a very popular senator.
And you see, I would have thought a comedian especially, because they're so risque, especially when they do stand-up in clubs,
mm-hmm.
and they travel the country as they go from Tomcatting to Tomcatting, from place to place.
Yeah, yep.
Boy, there would probably be a lot of baggage in your closet that might potentially be exposed. But most of what came out eventually had to do with him perving on women as a U.S. senator. And not necessarily back to the days when he was a comedian making the rounds. So today, he had to get up in the well of the Senate and address his colleagues and announce that he would be resigning in a few weeks.
Nevertheless, today I am announcing that in the coming weeks, I will be resigning as a member of the United States Senate.
And can you ever imagine, the guy who replaced Paul Wellstone never thought that it would ever occur that he would have to get up in front of his colleagues resign.
I mean, a few months ago, things were bright and rosy for him. I mean, it really has. That, you know, the tide has turned very, very quickly. And it really, over the last, it's basically in the 11th hour is when things really got rough for him, when his own people turned on him. Or I should say, you know, did the right thing.
Well,
the Democrats.
I think what they did is they just started to calculate the benefits of sacking him.
So you're not believing that they are doing it because this is the right thing to do.
I believe the women U.S. senators are.
Why aren't the men? Why don't you believe the men?
Because they're very protective of their own. You've just mentioned, and I was unaware of it, that the Washington Post and other outlets are looking to out 20 or 30 congressmen and senators.
Yeah, this is a report on Twitter by a Democratic strategist who said that his sources are telling him this is happening.
Right.
So, and I'm not shocked.
I believe that. I don't think Chuck Schumer decided to come forward and urge him yesterday to retire or resign as a result of him feeling, oh, my God, you know, we've got to make an example out of you. I just think he recognizes that the longer this takes place, the more and more other members of the U.S. Senate, other members of the House are put under the electron microscope.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, and to sit out there and to keep on maintaining your innocence and saying that you didn't do it when you've got woman after woman after woman, you know, corroborating and collaborating, you know, to get you out of there. I mean, it's just time to wrap it up.
Well, it's interesting how he would acknowledge it, saying, I'm not saying they're lying, but I don't necessarily remember it having occurred that
way.
Well,
he's hoping that by saying that, he's going to have some people who are sympathetic and just say, well, you don't know. Look, I mean, he doesn't remember it. I mean, it's their word against his.
Right. But at first, when it's only one or two, you generally take that point of view.
Yep.
But then when it's three, four or more, that tide begins to turn, and he knew it was over today, but he decided to take some parting shots at Judge Roy Moore in Alabama and the President of the United States, Donald Trump.
I, of all people, am aware that there is some irony in the fact that I am leaving while a man who has bragged on tape about his history of sexual assault sits in the Oval Office, and a man who has repeatedly preyed on young girls campaigns for the Senate with the full support of his party.
He's right. In my opinion, he's right.
Well, let's find out from our many listeners out there. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Breaking news. He was considered to be a clone of Barack Obama.
Oh, very handsome man, you know, young guy that was going to be, yes, very well spoken, but well, just a cool guy.
He came out of the corrupt dynasty in Memphis. The Ford family controlled it. They had no connection to the Ford Motor Company. It was the black iconic family that had upwards of 8 members of their family serving at one time or another. The city of Memphis, either in both the state legislature or in the city council. And the brightest of all of them was the former Congressman Harold Ford Jr.
Mm-hmm.
He had run against John Corker, presently the senator who will not run for reelection, in what was a very contentious and racially charged race to become the first black U.S. senator in Tennessee. In fact, one of John Corker's ads had a blonde woman using a very seductive voice in the ad saying, "Harold, call me. Harold, call me." A blonde white woman. Because it had always been suggested that the congressman, Harold Ford Jr., loved the ladies. White, blonde, blue-eyed, blonde-haired, blue-eyed ladies, of which he was always seen in the company of. Well, he lost the race. He came to New York City, got a job with Morgan Stanley, and from
2007.
And from time to time, it would always be suggested that he would run for New York State office.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Got married as well.
Right, as an appealing candidate. He was bandied about to run for the U.S. Senate, U.S. Congress, even the mayoralty. But a lot of people said, yeah, but you're a carpetbagger. You know, you're from Tennessee. You know, you can't do what Hillary Rodham Clinton did. And now I see that Morgan Stanley has fired him today because apparently he had loose morals and hit on somebody at Morgan Stanley.
Well, no. She wasn't at Morgan Stanley. And so the Huffington Post's Yashar Ali, who's been breaking a lot of stuff, he has received information and he's actually spoken to this woman and seen email between this woman and Harold Ford Jr., who has been fired because apparently he was harassing this woman. He intimidated her and he forcibly grabbed her one evening when she thought she was meeting him for professional reasons. She actually was so frightened that she went to a building employee, a building security person, and reported it. She also talked to some people right afterwards and said she was very, very concerned about this. Now, again, Yashar Ali from Huffington Post is not identifying this person. The Morgan Stanley folks are not identifying it. But actually, Harold Ford made a statement, and he didn't say her name, but he referred to her as a news reporter. So this is a news reporter that's as much as we know about her. That's hint that's been thrown out of there.
Was it you he was talking about?
Well, I do know Harold Ford Jr.
How do you know Harold Ford Jr.?
Well, he used to always come into Fox News.
Yes.
And when I was doing Fox and Friends weekend, he would do shows. He would come in on the weekends and I actually thought he was kind of a rude, kind of a prickly guy. And I thought, this guy's so young and he's so buttoned up and just has no personality. And we ended up talking one day and he was actually quite charming. But
well, that's because you had blonde hair at the time.
I think so.
He loves white women with blonde hair.
He invited me to go out to his house out in the Hamptons. I didn't go.
He was married at the time.
No, he wasn't.
No, he wasn't.
Right. This was not his problem.
Wow, you're a real magnet for these guys.
I really am.
I worked with you for many, many years on Good Day Early Call New York, like at 4:30 in the morning on Channel 5.
Yep.
And I'm telling you, you're like the last person in the world I'd perv on. How come all these guys want to perv on
you? Because this was back in my 30s when life was good, when the collagen had not left my system.
Man. You know,
when the Botox hadn't
just
come into
we should
full
just
effect.
Announce different guys' names. No. Since she was on Fox and Friends, hosted it. Good Day Early Call New York.
And
find
out wrapped it up.
How many of these guys perved on her?
No. Look, I mean, you meet people in the in the green room.
No, Tucker Carlson, he never perked on you, right? Right. Okay. I just want to balance it out.
I mean, look, that's where I spent all of my time. It was Tucker, work. That's
Tucker
how I
wears,
needed.
Tucker wears a bow tie. Never trust guys who wear
bow ties.
Wear a bow
tie just remember that.
No more, but he used to. Anyway, our number is 1-800-848-WABC. Let's go to Ben, who's calling from Long Island. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here.
Hey, Ben.
Yes, hello, Ben.
Am I on the air there?
You are, Ben.
Listen, I'm not going to say I ever liked Al Franken or, you know, he wasn't my favorite, but he's a senator, right? So, decent guy. I thought he had an opportunity to maybe get some respect on his way out. Look, I don't condone treating a woman the wrong way at all, but you got someone who's willing or you got a poor, prostitute with you or something like that, you get to grab him in the woohoo. You know, that's not assault. That's consent. What this guy did, take advantage of sleeping women, assault women, come on. That's different than what Trump did. Sorry, I'm not defending Trump either. He can be a disgusting pig too all he wants. But he didn't assault anybody, and on his way out he says, it's ironic, I'm going out while somebody else, the guy in the White House, did assault. I didn't hear any credible assault charges coming out on Trump.
Well Ben, you're talking about close to 10 different women who made all different charges against then-citizen Trump.
But I think Ben is saying that he feels, and correct me if I'm wrong, Ben, that you don't think the charges that these women have made are as egregious as the charges that the women have made against Al Franken?
Right, we're losing the gradient a little. And if I'm uneducated, you know, maybe you know something, Curtis, I don't know. But
well,
I haven't seen it.
All I know is that this president of ours was willing of late to try to float the notion that his voice on that Billy Bush tape in which he gave himself up was actually a fake voice that somehow had been injected. And then Billy Bush put that one to rest over the weekend
with
in an
great
interview.
Essay.
Right.
Listen, I'm not defending Trump. I'm not going to defend Trump. Whatever, he's a jerk. I'm just saying Al Franken, who I'm not going to defend either, had an opportunity to go out and say, I'm sorry for what I did. Done.
Yep, no, you're right. He didn't seem to show a lot of contrition there.
I'm disagreeing with both of you guys. I think that was the time for him to say that, with all due respect. And I think that I was listening to his voice, and I feel like he's humiliated.
Well,
I think
what he
Thanks
has to
call,
do
Ben.
Is he has to check himself in now. This is the next step to the Harvey Weinstein, Kevin Spacey, sexual pervert rehab clinic there in Arizona.
Where
five-star top shelf.
Yeah, and you can leave the property apparently and go to restaurants with females.
Now,
I don't know how that happens, but
other guys who are not in their positions, either Kevin Spacey, Harvey Weinstein, or
Matt
Al Franken. They and Matt Lauer, they end up getting sent to a diagnostic clinic in Avenue, right near Woodbridge, for the sexual pervs, so they can figure out why all the furniture is upstairs and rearranged in the wrong rooms.
Mm-hmm.
But these guys, they get to choose the facility that they go to, where they play golf all day, and supposedly they're being rehabbed out of being perverts.
By riding horses, you know, equine therapy.
Yeah, that was Anthony the Weiner Wiener in North Carolina. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. To the phones we go. Juliet Huddy in the house. And
yes.
To John in Albany. Welcome to WABC, Johnny.
Hi, Curtis. How are you?
I've had better days.
Big fan of yours. You've done a lot for the city of New York, and thank you.
Thank you, Johnny.
Listen, I'm not an Al Franken fan, but what did he do to be removed?
Well... He was on a trip several years
ago. I know. Mm-hmm. I saw the picture. Supposedly, he was, you know, touching a woman who had a flak jacket on.
She says that he also kissed her and without her consent.
Okay.
Under the guise of trying to rehearse a scene for a little skit that
right.
they were doing.
Right.
And that she told him, you know, wasn't happy about it, and that he, for the rest of the trip, was, you know, basically targeting her, making fun of her, you know, just isolating her, that type of stuff.
Right. To me, and I don't want to be disrespectful to anybody, he was a clown man at that point, and that's stupid. Does it rise to, you know, a crime?
Well, no one's, he's not being charged with a crime, but see what happened,
right.
I think, John, everyone was ready to give him a bit of a pass on that because he was just a comedian at that time. Mm-hmm. And we assumed that, okay, he gets into the U.S. Senate, you know, he's matured, he's behaving himself. And then woman after woman comes forward and says, no, when he was a U.S. Senator, he grabbed my tuchus, he grabbed my tuchus.
Yeah.
And the last one, though, that's what put him over the edge. It was a staff member who said he was just perving her.
Yeah. And again, to some degree, doesn't it come down to he said, she said. But where are we going to draw the line? When somebody accuses somebody, are you done then?
Well, I think
how many phone calls have we had asking the same exact thing? It's a big concern, obviously.
You have the president of the United States who would not acknowledge any of them. He became president.
Right.
You have Judge Roy Moore who remembered two of the young ladies, and now he seems to no longer remember anybody. I guess for men, they just have to deny everything. And then that's when it comes out. Then reporters start banging out all of the facts, comparing what you say to what they say.
I guess they're hoping that they're nothing else is going to come of it. But, I mean, in this day and age, these reporters, especially the Washington Post folks, the New York Times, I mean, man,
John, corporations have a trigger finger now. That means if the allegations come in, they know they're going to get sued for millions. So they want to show they're proactive. Whereas government... it's like Jupalong, you know, slowly, surely, we'll get around to it.
But I mean, but John's, you know, John's concern is understandable. You know, my concern is what, you know, if it's just these little things, these little transgressions, and I'm not saying that the Al Franken things were, but, you know, does it take away some of the steam? Does it kind of usurp some of the power of the women who really have been wronged?
Well, again, when it's two or more, you have to all of a sudden start saying, what is this? These women didn't know one another. Did they come together? Did they form a cabal?
Right, exactly.
Is it part of a conspiracy?
Yeah, exactly.
Which is generally what the Judge Roy Moore supporters are saying. It's all lies. It's all a conspiracy. All these women who had nothing to do with one another were all brought together by George Soros, funded by him, to bring down the great patriot and holy roller, the perv of all pervs, Judge Roy Moore. And I would ask any of them, how many of you would let your teenage daughter hang out with Judge Roy Moore, huh? Huh? That would
raise
be a
hands,
true litmus test. Well, let your teenage daughters hang out with Judge Roy Moore. Then all of a sudden there might be some, I don't know, well, you know, my daughter has something to do that day. But anyway, on that note, let's get our news headlines and updates from Deborah Valentine.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa, 77 WABC.
What movie was this from? What Rudolph the Red-Nosed? Remember that scene? All the little elf people get together.
What kind of a Santa Claus song is this?
It's from Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
God, it's so generic.
Wasn't it
something I would expect to hear at Radio City Music Hall while the Rockettes are
dancing. There's a reason. But wasn't Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer the one where they had the, I'm Mr. Heat Miser? Was that in that one? Oh, that was...
Could be.
That's okay. Okay, well, that was a good one. But anyway, I love Christmas time. I mean, I'm a Christmas freak. But one of my favorite things, and if you have children listening to this, please get them out of the way right now. Okay. All right, there. I thoroughly enjoy the sick, demented, provocative, and often just really disturbing parodies, or I guess the mocking of the Elf on the Shelf. The pictures that people are posting on Facebook. Well, at least my friends are posting on Facebook all sorts of horrible things with Elf on the Shelf.
With elves.
Elf on the Shelf. No,
Elf on the Shelf. Can you describe what Elf on the Shelf is?
Elf on the Shelf, it actually is this phenomenon. I think it started hitting in about 2007. It was actually the brainchild of a mom and her two twin daughters who, I guess the mom was trying to teach her kids to be, you know, act good. Excuse me. Before Christmas. So she had this little elf toy, little elf guy, and the mother would put the elf on a shelf, and she told her daughters, look, this elf, he's an elf rep from the North Pole, and he's going to be watching you all day long. And at night, he flies back to the North Pole. He reports back to Santa whether you've been good or bad, and then he comes back here tomorrow. So then every morning, the little girls would wake up, and they would see the little elf, and he had moved into a different spot. Excuse me. hence Elf on a Shelf. He's, you know, on a shelf, on a table. So he's moved every night. He moves himself, rather, every night as he goes back to the North Pole to give, you know, his dossier to Santa Claus. So this has become a worldwide phenomenon. These women have made a fortune. It's actually spurred a mensch on a bench.
Mensch on a bench, yes. So the Jewish version of that.
Exactly. Excuse me, exactly. So it's a huge deal, but I'm surprised that you haven't heard of this. You've got three kids.
Elf on a bench. Elf on a shelf.
Mensch on a bench.
No, I've heard of gnomes on a shelf. Our own gnome lady.
Gnomes.
Our own gnome
lady
looks like a gnome when you look at his baldy head.
That's
but
not fair.
I've seen gnomes everywhere, which I'm always surprised that people would have in their yards or they would have in their homes.
I have a gnome in my house that I got when I was on a trip.
Last year. Me, that's like really freaky deaky.
Yeah, but they're not the gnome. Aren't really watching you do anything. The elves, though, are watching.
Elf on a Shelf. Well, now that version, when I was growing up and I was just a little young whippersnapper, about 4 or 5, and my sister was a year younger than me, Maria, and Alita a few years older, my mother, while sitting at the breakfast table, would say, oh, you know, the brownie was watching you kids yesterday.
The brownie.
Yeah, the brownie. So I guess
what do you
mean,
the brownie?
The brownie would be the version of the Elf on the Shelf.
But
back
what
then.
Was the brownie?
The brownie was the rat to Santa Claus. See, the brownie would watch you all during the day, and if you were bad, the brownie would rat you out to Santa Claus and Mrs. Santa Claus and the helpers, and they would put coal and wood in your stocking.
Oh, God, that came from a very negative realm here.
Right, but you see, what my mother, Francesca, would do is she would tell us all to go into our rooms, and she would have a conversation with the brownie. And
was this every day?
Not every day, but every few days during the Christmas season leading up to the presents being placed underneath the tree.
What did the brownie look like, though? This is
there
this
was
is
no. See, we weren't permitted to see the brownie.
Yes,
so
okay.
She would have this open conversation with the brownie, mm-hmm. in which later on I learned she was imitating the brownie's voice.
And how did so the brownie sound?
She'd be saying, and how was Curtis yesterday? And then all of a sudden, Curtis was not a very good boy. And I'd be hearing this. I'm like, whoa, yeah, that rat, that dirty rat, ate the Parmesan cheese, dropped dime on me,
brilliant.
Right? And Brownie, did you report this to Mr. Santa Claus? Yes, I did. Yes, I did. I took notes and reported it to Santa Claus. And naturally, my sisters were in their own room, and she would have that same conversation with the Brownie. And it really kept us in check.
I was going to say, did it have an effect on you?
Yeah, because we thought there was a brownie that was following us wherever we went. So then if you stepped in, you see, this only existed right after Thanksgiving, right mm-hmm. after Black
right,
Friday.
Right, right, but yeah, exactly.
And so then all of a sudden, it's like you had a monitor. You had like, it would be the same as having, if you were going on a date and a Sicilian mountain woman was following you, you know, with a mustache and everything,
so,
chaperoning you.
So what you're saying basically is that this Elf on the Shelf concept has basically been in many, many families throughout
so.
The world.
I think
Mensch
so.
On a bench, Elf on a Shelf, brownie.
Well, let's find out from our many listeners out there if they've discovered this or they grew up in that same kind of a circumstance in that time from Thanksgiving right on up to when you discover those presents underneath your Christmas tree.
My parents didn't have anything like that. I was such a good child. I guess they just felt...
Not according to your brother, who we spoke to earlier
from
Jerusalem.
He was wrong.
1-800.
He was a troublemaker, that one.
848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. And how many elves are on the shelf? Is it just one elf?
That there's only one elf. I mean, Santa can't send 500 scouts out. I mean, you know, there are a lot of kids in the world. So one elf per house. The elf is sitting on his shelf or on the table or wherever he feels like sitting, whatever his mood, you know, strikes him. And... he's gone at night. He's back up in the North Pole.
Now, what about sadistic kids if they all of a sudden try to maul the elf? Or
they're not supposed to touch him. I mean, obviously, if you touch the elf, you try to maul the elf, and you obviously don't want anything. You want coal for Christmas.
So the idea is you leave the elf alone, and every time you wake up in the morning, the elf is probably going to be in a different location.
Yeah, unless he has a fondness for a couch or something.
What happens
like that,
if you wake up in your bed and all of a sudden the elf is staring down at you?
Well, it's funny that you should say that because I always feel like lifelike dolls are, except for Barbie, were very disturbing for me, particularly clown dolls. Any clown doll was bad. But especially the older, those older dolls that had the little eyes that would like, you know, the they were like the plasticky or almost like China with the eyes that would kind of flicker. And sometimes the eye would get stuck halfway. Oh my God. Waking up, my grandmother gave me a couple of those. And I remember waking up one day. I was very, very young. And I had that thing next to me. And I just remember the eyeball halfway staring at me. And it was an old woman doll. And it was just so disturbing.
So it's like Chucky looking at
you. Oh, yeah. I mean, clowns.
God, you went through a lot of trauma as a youngster.
I put a lot of it on myself, I think.
How did you put it on yourself?
I was a very heavy, I had a heavy, heavy disposition.
A heavy disposition? Oh,
I was heavy.
You had a cloud over your head.
No, I mean, I was a happy kid. I was a good kid, but I was deep. I always felt like, you know, I felt just different.
So
I was kind of a freaky kid.
So the boys who would first date you, they had to watch their back, right?
No, I wasn't, not freaky in that way.
Well,
I was a weird kid. My mom was a singer and an actress. My dad was a TV producer, and so I was very, very dramatic and shocking. I
also
know.
A Sarah Bernhardt type.
A Sarah Bernhardt.
Yeah, like everything was very. It was like mama drama. It was like a
no,
novella.
I was constantly performing. I would be out. I remember my mom has a story that I would be out when we would be traveling. She would be flying down to the islands to perform, and I'd be at the airport, standing on the airport chairs, singing, you know, performing for everybody. I was like 3, 4, whatever, and it was constant. And one guy came up and he talked to my mom. And he's like, you know, you need to get your daughter some help. There's something wrong with her. My mom was so offended by that.
A little Shirley Temple.
But I got to tell you, I still talk to myself to this day. So maybe there is something wrong with me. I don't know.
Anyway, let's go to the phones. 1-800-848-WABC. First up in the queue, let's go to Mike, who's calling from New York. Oh, welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here at WABC. Mikey.
Mike.
Hey, Curtis. Hey, Julie. How you guys doing? I know, Curtis. I know. You have better days. But listen, I'm running out of places to put these elves. You got to hide them in a different place. You got to hang them from a chandelier. You got to put them in a shoe.
Yeah, parents say that they get stressed out because they're, you know, they're, especially if you live in New York and you've got a small apartment, there's just not many creative options. They put a lot of pressure on each other because then the other parents are like, oh, well, yes, I put them up in the chandelier. I put them in the, you know, the lockbox, and somehow I left a key out so that the kid would figure it out. Yeah, people are
I'm hanging them off each other, making them climb off this stuff and throw them around the room and see where they land.
Go and put them in like a suit jacket pocket in your closet.
Yeah.
I had lots of pockets.
You gotta be creative, you know?
Yeah, you gotta be creative.
Mike, you must have a lot of free time on your hands.
No, I'm telling you, Mike is telling, he is saying the exact same thing that a lot of my friends say.
Let's go, if we can, to Kathy, calling from New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet here at WABC. Kath?
Well, Merry Christmas and the best of health to Curtis and Julia Huddy.
Thank you.
Okay? You're in my intentions. Listen, my mother was really funny, and she was a character and a lot of fun, and she had this character made up called the Grinch in the Closet. And we were little girls, so she said, the Grinch in the closet, you'll never know where he is, but he's keeping an eye on you, Kathy. So one day, my uncle, who was, like, very funny and crazy, my mother said, you don't believe me? And I said, well, I do and I don't. I was only 7. But my behavior greatly improved. So my mother says, you know, go to the toy closet. I think I heard him in there. And then I opened it, and my uncle was, I didn't know it was him.
Oh, my
God. In a full Grinch outfit.
Oh, my God. That must have been horrifying.
No, it was fun. Oh. It was done in fun, you know. It was scary. Of course, I was like,
That's the best stuff about
holidays. But see, that kept her in check. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. Let's go to Harry. Welcome to WABC, Harry.
How you doing? My sister-in-law's got something similar to that. Above their fireplace, they got a mantle, and she has a small little stuffed reindeer. Tells the kids it's watching them all the time. My nephew, 7 years old, doesn't believe in Santa anymore.
Oh,
okay.
Wow.
Last weekend, he sees it there. She's telling me he's going to be watching. They got the fireplace on. When she left the room, he grabbed the reindeer, threw it in the fireplace, and says, enough of that crap.
Oh, my. Wow. Let's monitor this kid. Check back in 10 years and see what's happening.
Kid psycho.
No.
I'm telling you, these things are like turning kids into freaks.
It's funny, though, when your kid calls you out. My parents, I remember one night, I was probably 6 years old, and it was Christmas Eve night, and I remember my parents were, there was banging outside, and my mom woke me up, and she said, you know, Santa Claus is out there. And I was just thinking, I was too tired. I mean, they must have known that I never would have gotten up. But I was thinking, what if I did? Then I would have been like, there would have been no Santa Claus out there.
No.
I don't know. They could have ruined my life.
Man, this is depressing. 1-800-848-WABC. As we're talking about elves on the shelf.
And menches on benches.
Let's go to Christine in Matzo Pizza, a.k.a. Massapequa, Long Island. Welcome to WABC, Christine.
Thank you, Curtis. How are you?
I've had better days.
I want to wish you both happy and healthy holidays and a Merry Christmas.
Thank you. You too. I love Massapequa.
Oh, I love it also. I'm having trouble with, I'm out shopping, and I hope I don't lose you guys, because every once in a while I get static. But I wanted to tell you, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Tell us about the elf.
Okay. We've had Mr. Elf live in our house for about two years now, for my grandson. And, Elf usually hangs out near the tree, and every morning my grandson runs by the tree and he's looking for the elf and he's somewhere. And then if my grandson's behavior is not what I feel it should be, then I go over and I talk to the elf. And my grandson gets mad, and then he talks back to the elf in his favor.
Listen, that might be the way to work it.
Yeah, imagine these guys in the House and the Senate. They should have elves who watch them all day.
God, they should be handcuffed
and drop time on them. Now, that's for sure. They need minders.
See ya.